rubber bullets.
Of course.
So why did you come out here?
Well, this is what I have to do.
No let up in Hong Kong protests. This is Monday, October 21st, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Also ahead, we take you to Los Angeles for a look at Asians in Hollywood. Although it is seen as a paradise by many, New Zealand is having its problems with climate change. And at least 4 civilians and 3 soldiers are said to have died during cross-border skirmishes between Pakistani and Indian groups, reportedly making it one of the deadliest days in the area. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Tens of thousands of protesters marched in Hong Kong on the 20th straight week of protest against what they see as Beijing's attempt to control their city. This week's protests were met with strong opposition by police who used water cannon and tear gas on the demonstrators. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Hong Kong.
Fury and fire in the streets of Hong Kong. Protests like these on Sunday have been constant for 4 months. Police did not authorize this most recent protest and have also outlawed face coverings at public gatherings. On Sunday, they moved swiftly to contain the demonstration with water cannon, tear gas, and arrests. The protesters' 5 demands include universal suffrage, an investigation of police violence, amnesties for protesters, and the full official withdrawal of the spark that lit the fires of dissent at the beginning of this year. And now withdrawn extradition bill that would allow mainland China to try people arrested in Hong Kong. Protesters say they're not backing down, even under police pressure.
I don't think it is illegal.
Are you afraid of tear gas or rubber bullets?
Of course.
So why did you come out here?
Well, this is what I have to do.
Protesters have directed their ire at specific targets: Beijing-friendly businesses, banks, and the city's expansive subway system, which protesters say has folded to pressure from the pro-Beijing Hong Kong administration by restricting services in the public transport-dependent city to try to stifle the protests. On Sunday, protesters also set up roadblocks, which they say is not vandalism, but self-defense.
Actually, we just keep trying to protect ourselves because, like, all the robots are trying to block the way the police, and so we can keep a protection for ourselves. So, like, it's not a violent act, and we are not, like, aiming for destroying things, but we are just protecting ourselves. Yeah.
The city's administration doesn't see it that way. They've called the protesters terrorists and arrested more than 2,300 people. And Chief Executive Carrie Lam has made clear she's not backing down from her position of not providing any concessions. So how does this end? The 2014 Umbrella Movement protests, which had similar aims, ended unsuccessfully after 79 days, with the arrests of many protest leaders. This new movement is leaderless, making it harder to quash. Opposition lawmakers say the city's leadership holds the solution.
I think only our government can end this the situation. If she reply the 5 demand of the Hong Kong people as soon as possible, then most of us want to restore our normal life. We lost one every weekend. We have joined the protests, and so many younger people are hurt and arrested by the police.
But protesters say that won't deter them from taking to the streets next weekend and the weekend after that, and however long it takes. Anita Powell, VOA News, Hong Kong.
Hong Kong's leaders said Saturday the murder suspect, whose case inadvertently helped ignite the city's protest movement, wants to surrender to authorities in Taiwan. Carrie Lam told reporters that Hong Kong's government would actively follow up on a letter she received from Chan Tung Kai requesting help to give himself up. Chan is wanted by Taiwan authorities for allegedly killing his girlfriend during a trip to the self-ruled island last year. He was not sent back to face charges because there's no extradition agreement. He was, however, jailed in Hong Kong on money laundering charges and is due to be released this week. Lam has cited Chan's case as one of the main reasons that she wanted to close the loophole with proposed extradition amendments. But the proposal sparked massive protest over fears that they would put residents at risk of being sent into mainland China's Communist Party-controlled judicial system. These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now at voanews.com. U.S. Defense Secretary Mark Esper has made an unannounced trip to Afghanistan amid efforts to restart peace talks with the Taliban. Pakistan's Prime Minister Imran Khan held talks Sunday with leaders in Iran to formally begin a diplomatic offensive he said was aimed at defusing the neighboring country's escalating tensions with Saudi Arabia and the United States. Typhoon Hagibis killed 23 people and briefly paralyzed Tokyo, while 16 people are still missing, according to the public broadcaster NHK there. Japan sent tens of thousands of troops and rescue workers to save stranded residents and fight floods caused by one of the worst typhoons to hit the country in recent history. This is VOA Asia. We continue now. East Asian characters who have been part of Hollywood since the silent film era, they have been that, but the portrayal of Asian and especially Chinese characters in the history of U.S. movies has been described as problematic by many film scholars. But this is changing. Not only have Asian characters evolved over time, so have movie-going audiences. VOA's Elizabeth Lee reports from Los Angeles.
From this iconic Chinese theater in the heart of Hollywood to a famous old-time movie industry hangout named the Formosa Cafe, Hollywood has had a fascination with the Chinese culture and the Orient since the early days of the film industry.
Audiences were given this exotic glimpse of a land unknown to them. And I think it started there.
Filmmaker Arthur Dong produced a film on this topic and wrote a new book called Hollywood Chinese, where he says the movie industry's fascination with the Orient, especially in the 20s, 30s, and 40s, translated into problematic, one-dimensional Chinese characters.
I saw Chinese characters on screen, but they were always playing servants, coolies, laundrymen. And if they were women, they were prostitutes or servants.
And white actors played lead Chinese characters.
You had the main actors in yellowface.
Yellowface, meaning they actually literally yellowed up their skin. They usually slanted their eyes with prosthetics.
Are you so foolish as to believe that you can oppose the will of Fu Manchu?
They included the villain Fu Manchu, and in 1926, the character Charlie Chan debuted on the big screen. He was supposed to portray a more positive Asian American image.
He was smart and wise, but he was also very oriental in the worst sense, in that he was passive, he was quiet, he was smarter than anybody else, which is a good attribute, yes, but it was used in the stereotype way. And he spoke in broken English.
Caucasian characters played lead roles in the 1937 film The Good Earth, about rural Chinese farmers, even though Asian actors received parts in the film.
But it's overshadowed by this yellow-faced casting of the main actors. I think in its day, in the 30s, that was a norm. That's what Hollywood was doing.
But over the decades, Asian and Chinese Americans did find work in Hollywood, and a few earned a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. But even recently, some movie fans have been critical on social media of Hollywood casting white actors in main roles they believe should have gone to an Asian actor.
You're cynical, I get it.
They include the 2015 film Aloha, where Emma Stone played Allison Ng, a character of Asian descent. But in 2018, Crazy Rich Asians hit the big screen, with a majority Asian cast, an Asian American director, and an Asian as one of the writers. The movie was a milestone.
The sensation of Crazy Rich Asians, both in its critical and box office success, is a sign that things are changing. Filmmakers are being nurtured, attitudes are being nurtured and strengthened, where we won't take that yellow-faced casting anymore, where we won't take that kind of whitewashing attitude of making an Asian character white.
Technology is also opening doors for Asian Americans to tell stories on their own terms.
We have so many more platforms, right? There's the Netflixes, there is the Amazon Primes and the Hulus.
With Asian Americans being the fastest growing racial group in the U.S., a new generation of Asian American artists can use the different digital platforms to tell stories without being boxed in to a stereotype. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Cafeteria style. happening now in Asia, Bangladesh will start relocating Rohingya Muslims to a flood-prone island off its coast next month as several thousand refugees have agreed to move, that according to a government official. Dhaka wants to move 100,000 refugees to Bashan Char, a Bay of Bengal island hours by boat from the mainland to ease overcrowding in its camps at Cox's Bazar. We are happy you're with us on VOA Asia. Climate change, pollution, and fishing are causing irreversible damage to New England's marine environment, according to a new report. It states that many seabirds and marine mammals are at risk of extinction. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
New Zealand's long coastline that stretches for about 15,000 kilometres is under increasing pressure from development, shipping, and climate change. The Ministry for the Environment's report states that 90% of the country's seabirds and about a quarter of its marine mammals are threatened with extinction. The study asserted that 16% of New Zealand's fish stocks have been overfished. Agriculture and forestry, as well as urbanisation, are increasing the amount of sediment, chemicals and plastics flowing into the oceans and contaminating the coastline. New Zealand Secretary for the Environment is Vicky Robertson.
The sea is receiving environment for what happens on the land. So our activities on land from the mountains to the sea are having an impact on what we're seeing in the marine environment. Growing cities, forestry, agriculture, all delivering increasing amounts of sedimentation.
The report also confirmed New Zealand's sea temperature had risen and was consistent with the global average. It also found sea levels were rising faster than before. There's a warning, too, that New Zealand can expect more frequent marine heat waves, similar to those in 2017 and 2018, and ocean acidification. For the first time, data from citizen scientists was used in the government report. Community groups were instructed about how to collect robust data. The next official marine environment report is due in 3 years. New Zealand is a grouping of islands in the South Pacific Ocean, southeast of Australia. It has a population of 4.5 million people. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Coming up, the U.S. president faces increasing pressure. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. With VOA Asia, also follow radio program hosts VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. At least 4 people have been killed, nearly 50 injured Sunday after police fired on thousands of Bangladeshi Muslims protesting a Facebook post by a Hindu who allegedly defamed the Prophet Muhammad. Mob attacks over Facebook posts perceived to be blasphemous have emerged as a major headache for security forces in Bangladesh. This is VOA Asia. Official Washington finds itself consumed by the twin crises of impeachment and Syria. President Donald Trump is trying to fend off congressional Democrats moving toward impeachment, even as he faces a fierce backlash from some Republicans over his decision to pull U.S. forces out of Syria. Trump is used to weathering political storms, but this one is particularly intense, as we hear from VOA national correspondent Jim Malone.
At the White House, President Trump on the defensive over the pullout of U.S. troops from Syria.
We were supposed to be there for 30 days. We stayed for 10 years. And it's time for us to come home. We're not a policing agent. And it's time for us to come home.
Trump was already busy fending off a Democratic-led impeachment inquiry in Congress, spurred by his request to Ukraine to investigate political rival Joe Biden.
Impeachment. I never thought I'd see or hear that word with regard to me, impeachment. I said the other day it's an ugly word. To me, it's an ugly word.
With impeachment as a backdrop, tensions boiled over at a White House meeting with Democrats over Syria, including Congressman Steny Hoyer.
I have served with 6 presidents. I have been in many, many, many meetings like this. Never have I seen a president treat so disrespectfully a co-equal branch of the government of the United States.
The political pressure on the president over impeachment appears to be mounting, says analyst John Fortier.
The president's removal, the president's reputation afterwards is something that clearly he must be thinking about. But in terms of the way that the White House is reacting, I do think that they have a similar way of fighting all sorts of controversy. And it's not to back down. It's to really stand up and push back. And that's what we've been seeing.
Both sides in the impeachment inquiry are closely watching public opinion, says William Galston.
Republicans have to be very careful not to be seen as defending the indefensible. And if they take the position of denying that the president did anything wrong, I think that they're going to lose ground with the American people.
Trump has proudly cast himself as a political disruptor from the start. And there could be more to come as the impeachment battle unfolds, says historian Barbara Ann Perry.
So far, he has bombarded and exploded, I guess I say, all the norms and all of the precedents of the previous 44 administrations. So nothing to me seems out of bounds for this particular president.
No matter how the impeachment battle turns out, one likely result is a deeper partisan divide, says Thomas Schwartz.
It will probably polarize the country even more. I think you'll have a very divided country in a way similar to what you saw in 1999 and 2000 after the Clinton impeachment and the divisive election of 2000.
All of this coming as the country prepares for the next presidential election in 2020. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
This news break from VOA Asia. Amid tight security in the capital, Indonesia's President Joko Widodo was sworn in for his second and final term as leader of the world's most populous Muslim country. A high alert was in effect in Jakarta with over 30,000 police and military personnel deployed to secure the city after the stabbing of the country's top security minister on October 10th. The minister was seriously wounded. Now on VOA Asia, the lights are back on through most of the state of California, where 2 million people had their power cut during the past week in a precautionary effort to prevent wildfires. As VOA's Mike O'Sullivan reports, a heightened fire risk has left power companies racing to upgrade transmission systems, which sometimes spark these blazes.
The power was deliberately cut through large swaths of Northern California to prevent wildfires, leaving 700,000 businesses and homes temporarily in the dark. 24,000 customers also had their power cut in Southern California because of hot, windy conditions.
A large part of the problem is climate change. Electricity lines have been starting fires for a century, but generally those fires were pretty small. What's changed, and we saw in a dramatic and horrible way in Paradise, California last year, is that the same sort of electric line failure can now start a massive conflagration, which in that case killed 85 people.
Pacific Gas and Electric, the Northern California company whose equipment sparked that blaze, has again been criticized for its widespread precautionary power cuts. An expanding system of cameras and weather sensors provides real-time data, supplemented by images from space and human analysis, but they don't catch all the problems.
In the last 5 years, about 50 to 60% of the fires that have started involving our system have been due to things flying into our lines. So that's not necessarily a failure of our system. It could be palm fronds, it could be other vegetation, it could be a critter.
Power providers work to reduce the risk, trimming trees, and using insulated cables. They're also rethinking procedures for precautionary power cuts.
The other, which is being proposed, is to have a committee, rather than the utility, make the shutoff decision. And the committee would include utility executives, but it would also include public safety officials, and it would also include regulators and possibly politicians.
He says power companies in California are now liable for damages even when they're not negligent, and that should be changed. Experts say new technologies help lower the risk. Distributed power production could reduce the need for power lines in high-risk areas.
Together with local production of renewable electricity, like, for example, distributed solar and battery energy storage, those are also very important technologies for avoiding wildfires.
And fuel cell technology, the kind used in some new cars, allows for even more local power generation. They say the fire risk won't go away, but can be managed. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Every October for the past 48 years, hot air balloons have been filling the skies over Albuquerque, New Mexico, giving spectators both on and off the ground a visual feast of rare beauty. VOA's Julie Tabo visited the southwestern state's largest city to see how a modest launch of 13 balloons almost five decades ago has evolved into the largest ballooning event in the world.
Morning. How you doing?
Gary Micklick has been piloting hot air balloons for 32 years.
Slowing down a little bit.
20 of those years have been at the Albuquerque International Balloon Fiesta, where these aerial marvels have been filling the skies over New Mexico for the past 48 years.
We're just flying above the surface of the earth, like, you know, really, you know, close to the ground or high up. I mean, it's unique. You have few types of aviation where you can just float above the ground. So, yeah, after that first, like, it's like, you're hooked.
The festival is the largest ballooning event in the world. This year, it drew more than 550 pilots from across the U.S. and from 17 other countries. About 800,000 visitors came to see balloons of all shapes and sizes. From special Glodio events at night to the early morning mass ascensions. A stunning display of hundreds of balloons that take to the skies at sunrise in a series of waves over the course of an hour.
I've been coming out for 40 years since I came out here for college, and it's fabulous every single time. You can't beat it.
It screams New Mexico. I don't know another place that has something remotely close to this.
It's almost like a tradition to come over here and meet it, so every New Mexican knows that every time when October comes, it's the balloon time.
I've never seen this in real life, and that made me think, what if I was here in New Mexico one day, and my cousins took me over here, and my dream actually came true?
The balloons are located in a massive launch field where the crowds can get up close, and that makes it more personal, says Operations Director Sam Parks.
One of the things that I heard yesterday, which really touched my heart, was a young boy telling his mother, this is the best day ever. And so when you hear things like that, it just kind of puts it all in perspective, and it makes you feel like you're doing a good thing.
That's a familiar feeling for regulars like Micklick, and something to aspire to for those still dreaming to come.
So this is at a bucket list for every balloonist all over the world. They have to come here. And some keep coming back, like me. See you next year!
Julie Tabo, VOA News, Albuquerque, New Mexico.
How would you like a long time on an airplane? Australia's Qantas Airlines on Sunday completed the first nonstop commercial flight from New York City to Sydney, which was used to run a series of tests to assess the effects of ultra-long-haul flights on crew fatigue and passenger jet lag. The Boeing 787 Dreamliner touched down in Sydney early Sunday morning after a flight of 19 hours and 16 minutes, the world's longest. Professor Marie Carroll from the University of Sydney said she and fellow passengers did a lot of stretching and group exercises at prescribed intervals. And she added, we did the Macarena in the economy cabin. This has been VOA Asia. Get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. Our thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Carl Starling, our managing editor, Diane Gao. I'm Ira Memel in Washington. Have a wonderful day ahead.